thousands of people have mysteriously vanished in America's wilderness. Join us as we dive into the deep end of the unexplainable and try to piece together what happened. You are listening to Locations Unknown.
What's up, everybody, and welcome back to another episode of Locations Unknown. I'm your co-host, Joe Irado, and with me, as always, is a man who's waiting for the exact right moment to release his rap diss track against Chris Brown, Mike Vandebogart.
Oh, thank you, Joe. That is a very interesting intro.
Are you aware of, like, the nuclear warfare that is going on in the rap community right now?
I am afraid to say I'm not.
Oh, it's fantastic.
Okay. Well, you'll have to fill me in for our Patreon episode.
It's like if Ariana Grande, Billie Eilish, and Taylor Swift all just started attacking each other with music releases.
Oh, gosh.
And, like, dark crap that people can go to jail for.
Wow.
Yeah, it's pretty intense. Like, Drake is involved, Chris Brown. I don't know all the people that are involved. I just started learning about it today, and it's fantastic. And the music they're putting out is phenomenal.
Wow.
It's just all very bad.
Interesting. So, I'll have to take a look.
Yeah, so there we go.
All right. Well, thanks for that little tidbit of information I didn't know. But thank you to everybody for showing up for the latest episode of Locations Unknown. Just a couple quick updates here. First, we'd like to get to some new Patreon shout-outs. So Lufate Wharton, Fabio Alexandra, Jennifer Dunn, Julie Clifton, D. Jagstat, and Bella Murray. So thank you so much for supporting the show. And, you know, if not for people like you, we would not have just had a great, great, amazing time with the hosts of National Park After Dark. If you haven't heard by now, we joined them on their show earlier in the week, and we had a great time.
Yeah, head on over there, and I'll look up the episode number, but we did it on Everett Ruiz, and it was so much fun.
It was fun. They're coming back on our show May 24th, so mark that in your calendars. We also have some, we can't announce them yet, but some more exciting collaborations coming up here pretty quickly.
It's their latest one, but episode 219 for National Park After Dark.
Now, I mean, probably most of the people listening have heard of their show. So if you haven't, go over there, listen, and subscribe to their show.
Absolutely.
It's a great show. Also, I want to give an episode suggestion shout out to Jenny Olson. She recommended this case, and it's an interesting case just because the guy was really experienced, and it was in a park we haven't covered since early 2019. So Rocky Mountain National Park. So interesting case, cool park. And finally, if you want to call the show, you can call 208-391-6913 and leave a voicemail. We listen to all of them, and we will play them. The funnier they are, the meaner they are, we will play them on a future episode and then react to them.
It's 100% true.
Yeah. So outside of that, if you want to support the show, you can join our Patreon membership. Extra episodes, I think we're up to 46 or 47. Mm-hmm. YouTube memberships, premium subscriptions on Apple, they all kind of give you the same thing. You can buy swag from our Facebook store or our website store. And if you know you don't have the spare funds to support us monetarily, you can always just spread the word about Locations Unknown. If you listen to a cool podcast that covers missing people, you know, start peppering them with comments and emails to, you know, do a collaboration with us. And that also
that really seems
helps
to work, apparently. Yes.
So thank you for all of that. So
yes.
I don't know, any other comments?
I'll just reiterate, we're doing another collaboration with National Park After Dark for May 24th. And one thing that we want to do, we're not sure exactly how we're going to structure the show, but one of the things I promised them was that we have great call-ins from our fans. So Mike gave you the number. I'll give it again, 208 208- 391-6913. Call, ask questions that you'd want to ask Danielle and Cassie from the show. Yep. Leave, you know, maybe Montana Mike will call in, or North Dakota Ned will call in with a special message for our guests. That'd be pretty fantastic.
Yeah. Like, try to keep it. Yeah. Yeah. Try to, you know, because they're going to be, you know, their time is valuable, and, you know, try to, you know, maybe somewhat keep it related to their show. But if you're really funny, like,
yeah, we're gonna screen these ones. We're not just gonna play them raw like we normally yeah. do. We're gonna screen these ahead of time and pick out some of the best ones for yeah. time. So call, leave your messages if you have good questions or funny comments. That'd be great.
And this is a great chance for, you know, big fans of their show to kind of, you know, ask them questions, because they did mention to us they don't do a lot of like question and answer
yeah.
shows. So
this is your shot.
Their fans don't know, you know, everything there is to know about them. So here's your
absolutely.
Shot.
And then one last thing, if you're not on our social media, you should go check it out. And maybe, I don't know, you can put links in show notes, right?
Yeah.
All right. So we would want to do it temporarily, but we are hiring a part-time researcher position because our show is growing. We already got about 30 or 40 applications in, but if you go to our social medias right now or check the show notes, there is a Google Forms link to get some basic information and instructions on how to apply. So if you have research experience, we're looking for you to help, because once we get this person up and running, our hope is to put out almost double the amount of content.
Yeah.
We're looking to really ramp it up. So if you're good at that, be sure to apply, and the best of luck to everyone.
Yes.
What's the saying from the Hunger Games? You know, may the odds be ever in your favor.
Yes. There you go.
All right, everybody, let's gear up and get out to explore locations unknown. Wednesday, September 27th, 2023, an experienced hiker and trail runner is planning a 28-mile route in Rocky Mountain National Park. He sends a text to his family midday, and when he never checked in later, was reported overdue, and the search began. Join us this week as we investigate the disappearance of Chad Palanche. So as Mike said, we haven't done a Rocky Mountain National Park since 2019, and
yeah,
it's a popular park. It's in the middle of the country, so it sees a lot of visitors. I love going there, so I'm surprised we haven't done one from there in a while.
I've actually never been to the park. You've been there a few times.
You've never been to Rocky Mountain National Park?
No.
Yeah, I think every time I've done a trip, you weren't able to go on it.
Yeah, not to Rocky Mountain.
We got window love. Awesome. So it was established in January 26, 1915. It's in Colorado, and it sees about 4.3 million visitors per year. So we're going to go into a little history of the Rocky Mountain National Park. It's not complete, so just some highlights. If you want to see more or hear more, you're going to have to listen to all of our other episodes from 2019. So the history of Rocky Mountain National Park began when the Paleo Indians traveled along what is now Trail Ridge Road to hunt and forage for food. The Ute and Arapaho people subsequently hunted and camped in the area. In 1820, the Long Expedition, led by Stephen H. Long, for whom Long's Peak was named, approaches the Rockies via the Platte River, and settlers began arriving in the mid-1800s, displacing the Native Americans, who mostly left the area voluntarily by 1860, while others were removed to reservations by 1878. Here are some interesting facts about Colorado. The highest paved road in North America is the road to Mount Evans off of I-70 from Idaho Springs. The road climbs up to 14,258 feet above sea level. I didn't know they had a road that went that high.
Yeah, I didn't either.
That's taller than a lot of their 14ers.
Yeah, I was out there for a wedding a couple of years ago, and I had a lot of time during the day, and I was going to go try and drive up there, but it was just, I think you needed a permit to get all the way to the top. So never ended up making it up there.
You should have.
I had to go to a wedding.
Nah, you could have. That's more important.
Yeah.
Content for the show.
Yes.
So Trail Ridge Road, the highest continuous U.S. highway, leaves Rocky Mountain National Park on the east and soars to 12,183 feet as it crosses the Continental Divide to the western slope. The biggest temperature swing in Denver is 66 degrees. It happened on January 25th, 1872. The high was 46 degrees and the low dropped to negative 20s. That's crazy.
Sounds like Wisconsin weather.
That does sound like Wisconsin weather, except they have more beauty to look at.
Yes.
Denver's first drive-by shooting happened in 1877. Court Thompson was shot from another carriage after a brawl at the Denver Park Bar. The first drive-by shooting was in horse and buggy.
Jeez.
I do say, sir, you besmirched my name back there. And then they slowly come up on their horse. The Grand Mesa on the western slope is the world's largest flat-topped mountain. The Grand Mesa is located east of Grand Junction and has an area of about 500 square miles, stretching for nearly 40 miles. The Mesa is home to over 300 lakes. More than a third of Colorado is owned by the federal government. According to the Colorado State Forest Service, nearly 68% of Colorado's forests are in federal ownership. The primary land manager in the U.S., the U.S. Forest Service, with 47% or 11.3 million acres. So that's all BLM land, right? Bureau of Land Management?
Yeah, and I mean National Park. And
okay.
It's a mixture, but yeah, it's a lot of federal government land.
All right. Well, in the BLM land, you don't need permits. You can just go camp.
Yeah.
So according to our friends over at the Köppen Climate Classification System, Rocky Mountain National Park has a subarctic climate with cool summers and year-long precipitation. The complex interactions of elevations, slope, exposure, and regional scale air masses determine the climate within the park, which is noted for its extreme weather patterns. A collision of air masses from several directions produce some of the key weather events in the region. When cold Arctic air from the north meets warm, moist air from the Gulf of Mexico at the Front Range, intense, very wet snow falls with total snow depths measured in feet accumulated in the park. Temperatures are often moderate at elevations below 9,400 feet, but at higher points like Bear Lake, Trail Ridge Road, or Long's Peak, it may snow even in July.
When were you there? When it snowed? You had that like, snowstorm.
Yeah, that was...
Is that like September?
No, that was like... No, it was later, I think. Because I've gone in early spring, I've gone in midsummer, I've gone in late summer, I've gone in fall. I love going to Colorado, so I've gone at all different times. A wild variation between day and nighttime temperatures is also typical of mountain weather. Summer days in July and August often reach the 70s or 80s and drop into the 40s at night, all temperatures given in Fahrenheit. Based on 10 years of precipitation data, Estes Park receives approximately 13.1 inches of rain or moisture every year. Grand Lake receives about 19.9. And the precipitation comes in the form of rain or snowfall throughout the year. So winter, which is December to March, lower elevations on the east slope of the Rockies are usually free of deep snow. At higher elevations, Arctic conditions prevail. Sudden blizzards, high winds, and deep snowpack are common. The west side of the park experiences more snow, less wind, and clear, cold days during these months. Most high country overnight trips require gear suitable for negative 35 degrees or below. Skiing and snowshoeing conditions are best in January, February, and March. That's where I got stuck in a blizzard up there.
Yeah.
It was sunny and warm. Then it was a blizzard for 2 hours. Then it went back to sunny and warm again. It was so wild.
That's mountain weather.
I know. It was so wild.
Yeah.
And it was lightning while it was blizzarding. It was intense.
We have a fun little game coming up about lightning.
We do?
Yeah, in here. We'll get to it.
Okay.
Yeah.
I'm excited now.
I mean, it's not really a game. It's kind of funny.
You always hype things up and then shoot them down right away.
That's what I do.
You get really nervous that it won't be as much fun. Spring, which is April to May, comes to the mountain area elevations 8,000, 9,000 feet in late April. And although snowfalls are not uncommon at this time of year, unpredictable weather alternates between warm and cold, wet and dry. In June, spring is just reaching the subalpine country, 9,500 feet to 11,500 feet. While summer is on the plains, wildflowers begin blooming at lower elevations in late April and early May. Many trails are still snow-covered in late May. Trail Ridge Road opens for the season then. Summer, which is June to August, on the alpine tundra, which is 11,500 to 13,000 feet, wildflowers start to bloom from late June to early August.
If you've ever been in the mountains, like when the wildflowers
are blooming, it's beautiful.
When we were in Glacier, we were there.
Garden Wall?
Yeah, I mean.
That was beautiful.
Just seeing like rolling hills like into a valley of just covered in wildflowers.
And it's so many.
Yeah.
Like the vastness of it is just.
It's cool.
Indescribable.
Yeah.
Pictures do not ever do it justice.
Nope.
Afternoon thunderstorms and wind are normal patterns. Always be prepared for temperature drops from 10 to 20 degrees Fahrenheit. And then lastly, fall, September to November. September and October are crisp, really clear, crisp air, blue skies, generally dry, and early snowstorms may occur. Aspen leaves start changing colors in mid-September. Elk mating season begins in September and continues through most of October. Trail Ridge Road usually closes for the winter by mid-October. So a little bit about the terrain. If you haven't picked up on it already, it's rocky. Very rocky in Rocky Mountain National Park. It is one of the highest national parks in elevation, with elevations from 7,800 feet to 1,425 feet at the highest point, which is Long's Peak. Trail Ridge Road is the highest paved road, as we said before, and there are 60 mountain peaks over 12,000 feet high to provide scenic vistas. On the north side of the park, the Mummy Range contains a number of 13er peaks, including Heggs Peak, Mummy Mountain, Fairchild Mountain, Epsilon Mountain, and Mount Chiquita. Several small glaciers and permanent snowfields are found in the high mountain. I don't know how to say that word. What is that?
Just in the high mountain area.
In the high mountains. All right. some of the animals you'd expect in the park: elk, bighorn sheep, coyote, mountain lion, moose, bobcats, gray fox, and black bears. So what you'd want to just carry with you, your basic hiking stuff, always have winter gear and rain gear. Yep. That's the one thing I've learned the hard way is even in summer, you're going to want to be prepared for snow if you're spending multiple days
in the mountains. And I would recommend, this helped me in Mount Rainier when we hit like a sideways rainstorm, is get a couple dry sacks and keep a, you know, a couple pairs of, you know, dry clothes in there, because we had rain gear and still got completely soaked. Rain gear, like, well, it'll keep you dry for a while, but if you're in torrential rain, you're still
you're basically soaked. Like swimming.
Yeah.
So you're just going to get wet.
So make sure to bring, you know, a dry sack with some dry clothes, because hypothermia can become a major problem.
Absolutely. Headlamps, map, compass, sunglasses, sunscreen. When you're in the mountains, you can get sunburn easier.
Yes.
You're in thinner air. And then basic first aid stuff. If you are crossing snow and ice, you want to stay back from steep snow slopes and crevices. Snow avalanche danger is often high. Sometimes in those mountaintops, you could be standing on what feels like the top, and it's an overhang of snow.
Yeah.
So you want to know what you're doing if you're up there. It's very dangerous with avalanche potential. You want to know how to recognize those conditions, and if you don't, you shouldn't be up there. Wind chill is a term used to describe what the air temperature feels like to human skin due to the combination of cold temperatures and the wind blowing. It's extremely windy up there. When we had our blizzard, we were at the keyhole going up Long's Peak, and the snow was going upwards. It was so windy, it was hitting the valley and coming up. It was snowing straight up in the air.
Yeah.
It was pretty wild.
Not something you see every day.
No. So you want to be aware of that.
Yes.
And then you can get elevation and altitude sickness. Symptoms include headache, nausea, fatigue, dizziness, vomiting. If that's happening, you want to take your time, drink water. If it doesn't subside, you need to go to lower elevations. That's really the only thing that can help it.
Yeah, nothing is going to get rid of that if you're already experiencing those things other than going down.
Yes.
So
avalanches occur when the sun warms the snow. Natural avalanches can occur. You want to avoid traveling across or under steep snow slopes unless you have the equipment and knowledge to do so. So when you are traveling in avalanche country, you want to carry an avalanche safety gear kit and make sure everyone in your party knows how to use their gear before beginning your trip. Essentially, avalanche safety gear includes a shovel, a transceiver, a probe, and a first aid kit. Alpine lightning. This one's important. I experienced this firsthand. You're out in the open, so if it's lightning, you want to get below something or stay low to the ground. If you're lucky, if you're not on the peak, lightning will usually strike the peak, so you'll be good there, but you don't want to be out and be the highest object while you're in the clouds.
Yeah.
All right, so here's the fun little game. On a scale of zero, with zero the highest risk to avoid, to 10, and 10 is the safest. I don't know if I agree with that scoring system, but okay.
Yes.
Places to be aware of when a thunderstorm and lightning rolls in, when are you while you're recreating in the outdoors. Zero, at the top of the tallest mountain above the tree line.
Obviously.
Or am I supposed to guess these or read these off?
No, you can just read them.
Ones, at the top of mountain lower above the tree line, located below other nearby peaks. That's where I was. It was very scary. Another one, on a wide open slope of mountain terrain above the tree line. In a cave or rock shelter on the side of a mountain. On the windward side of the mountain where the storm is coming from. In open water, boat, canoe, or kayak, or sheltered near trees close to water. Those are all ones.
So very dangerous.
Yeah. Lightning. Zero is at the top.
Yeah.
But yeah, you don't want to be on the windward side because you're literally the cloud that generates electricity is about to hit you.
Crash into you.
Yeah. You're at the same height as the cloud where it starts. The two is while descending a mountain in a gully or lower elevation area of the mountain. Gullies are better than ridges and open areas. You want to stay low. Threes, in ditches and lower elevations below tree line. In shelter at the base of a cluster of low elevation trees, not on an exposed slope below tree line. And the safest option, shelter inside a vehicle or building. If you are near a vehicle or building and you hear the roar of thunder, head indoors. Safest place you can be is inside a building or metal-topped vehicle with tires because the rubber acts as grounding.
Yep.
If you can't get to a safer location, immediately get off any elevated areas like the mountaintops. Never lie flat on the ground because you will make an excellent conductor if it hits near you. You want to reduce the surface area that is exposed by crouching down. Sit or crouch on top of your backpack to reduce your direct contact with the ground. Put your hands behind your head and bend forward. This is lightning position. We talked about this because you'd want it to hit you in the butt, not the head. Yes. And then it will go through your butt, through your leg, into the ground. If it hits you in the head, the lightning, I think that's like the rule of thumb, really. Lightning wants to go to the ground.
Yeah.
And it's going to travel the least resistance there. So if it hits you in the head, it's going to go through your blood vessels, which go through all of your brain, your organs. Or if your butt's the highest, it's going to hit you in the butt and follow your veins through your leg into the ground.
Lightning does go from ground to cloud, too.
Yeah, that's more rare.
So, I don't know.
Regardless, you don't want it to hit you in the head or the vital organs.
I'll Google that. I think, I'll Google it.
Yes.
Yeah.
Google it. So just don't be out in the open. Don't lay on the ground. Just don't be in a storm. There you go. That's the best bet. Just don't be in a lightning storm.
Yeah.
And you want to stay sheltered for at least 30 minutes after you hear the last sound of thunder so that you know it's completely gone. All right, Mike, let's get into Chad Palanch.
Yes. So here we go. Just before I get, cloud to ground is more common.
I told you.
You're right.
I did know that. I know stuff about weather.
All right. So we're going to jump right into Chad. So obviously, he went missing on September 27th of 2023. His remains have not been found. He was a male, age 49. He was 5'7", 155 pounds. He had brown hair, blue eyes. Clothing gear he was last seen in, and this is a bit of a guess. We don't know for sure, but family believes he was wearing a black North Face jacket, black running shorts or leggings, and a gray fanny pack. He did have a GPS with him, but it was not designed for emergency assistance. And this is something we've mentioned on other cases. If you're going deep into the backcountry, especially if you're going to be going alone, you really might want to invest in a personal locator beacon. Essentially what that is a device that you can activate in the event you're missing or are injured and still alive. And it will send a signal to search and rescue personnel with your location. And
can you rent them? I bet you could.
I'm pretty sure you can. So it's just a really good idea to have, especially if you're hiking alone, especially if you're going to be deep in you know, the backcountry. Joe's looking at him right now on the screen.
Yeah, once I pull up a good image, I'll pull it up.
So I would just highly recommend everyone that, you know, if you trail run and you're going, you know, like 30 miles into the backcountry, there are a couple hundred dollars to buy one. Just do it. It'll save your life if something happens. So,
yeah, and if you can rent them,
I'm pretty sure you can.
I bet
there's outfitters where you can rent them.
Yeah. Yeah. Not a bad thing to have.
There also is a fee with, you know, when you activate one, I believe there is a fee associated with that, but you know what? You're not going to care because you're going to get found.
Yeah.
So, experience in the wilderness. He was very fit. According to family, he did a ton of trail running, a lot of marathon experience. We actually have a video that his friends put together that Joe is going to play right now. Just a little like collage of.
I'll turn the music down a little bit.
Some of the cool stuff he's done. So, hope you muted it on the video.
Oh. I mean, it's just there's no talking.
Yeah, but it's just dead air.
Yeah, I mean, it shows him he's rock climbing. Oh, that's on Knife's Edge.
Yeah,
that's the one I want to do. Yeah, he was just in some thick snow. He's doing some cool. He's doing a lot of climbing. So you can tell he knows he's lead climbing in that one up as like a solid face. So this guy knows what he's doing.
Yeah. He's got that look about him of a guy that kind of, you know, he knows what he's doing. I get that just impression just seeing
him. He lives outdoors.
Yeah. So a very experienced person. He had not attempted this specific route, but he has done a number of runs in the area, including Long's Peak, over 30 times. So, very experienced. I would say he knows what he's doing. Now, I still, you know, even if you're trail running, you know, you don't have... I always, if I'm going, you know, 30 miles out in a Rocky Mountain National Park, I'm going to want a backpack with stuff that can, you know... Yeah, so I can, you know, stay the night if I have to.
Yeah.
Against my will, so to say. So that is kind of the profile of Chad. We'll jump right into the timeline. So the timeline of events leading up to his disappearance, very thin. We've got a lot of information on the actual search, which is pretty cool. We don't always have that. But so it starts on Wednesday, September 27th of 2023. This was when Chad was last heard from. He sent a text to his wife indicating he was almost to the summit of Mount Alice, which is about 13,135 feet. And this would have been just about 7 miles in a straight line east of where he had started his run. So, you know, he's about a fourth of the way done with his run already at this point. He had planned a 28-mile route that included crossing the Continental Divide and some off-trail travel through steep talus slopes. Potential travel areas also included Lake Verna, Mount Alice, Chief's Head Peak, Black Lake, Mills Lake, and Flat Top Mountain, according to NPS officials. It was also believed that he started his run from the East Inlet Trailhead near Grand Lake.
That's so what I have pulled up right here.
Joe's got all this pulled up.
So the East Inlet Trail, there's Mount Alice. That's towards the end of the trail.
So he was already kind of going off trail there.
Yeah. I mean, he'd have to go off trail to do that. Yeah. Because this trail is just an out and back.
Yeah.
I don't know if it has these lake names. These are kind of small lakes.
Yeah. So that was his planned trail run. And like we said, he's done this on Long's Peak, you know, over 30 times. So this is just going to be another trail run. It's now Thursday, September 28th of 2023, and he was reported overdue at this time when he did not check in with family. And almost immediately, park rangers kicked off a search, and not much longer after the search kicked off, they actually found his vehicle located at the North Inlet Trailhead on the west side of the park. So he either parked his car at the North Inlet Trailhead and ran back to the East Inlet, or he parked his car and then had someone drop him off. But either way, he was, you know, starting at the East End, the East Inlet, and he was going to end at the North Inlet Trailhead. So we're getting into the search now, which was an extensive search done by a lot of law enforcement out there. So it's September 29th, 2023. And a lot of these are direct statements from the National Park Service. So search efforts on this day included air reconnaissance, as well as ground crews on the North Inlet and East Inlet trails. And east of the divide near Mount Alice, search efforts included air recon and ground teams searching the Black Lake and Upper Glacier Gorge area, Thunder Lake, as well as North Inlet Trail to Solitude Lake. And obviously, they had no luck in finding him on the 29th. It is now October 1st of 2023. MPS had said there were over 55 individuals now involved in the search, including 38 search team members in the field. Efforts that day were focused on the Boulder Grand Pass, Mount Alice, McHenry's Peak, Arrowhead, Stoneman Pass, Chief's Head Peak, Thatch Top, Powell Peak, and Andrews Glacier areas. Teams were also searching trail sections on the west side of the park that were potentially on his route. However, this happens a lot of times in our searches, weather hampers the ability for the crews to get out there, and they were experiencing some really high winds at upper elevations, which hampered getting, helicopters in the air. So
here's real quick, for those who are watching the video, this was the east, this is the north. So this is the distance between the two trailheads.
Okay. Yeah, so it's just a big loop that he did, and that's why he had to go off trail, because there isn't an actual loop trail that goes between those two, I don't think.
Yeah, it doesn't look like it.
So
that's a lot of space to get lost in.
Yeah.
It really is.
And it's rough terrain. I mean, it doesn't look like it on the map, but the peak he was trying to summit when he sent that text was over 13,000 feet.
Yeah.
Yeah, look at that terrain.
Yeah, it's a little bit of a side view. It's very rocky.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's Mount Alice. Flat Top is over here. I saw it somewhere over here.
Yeah, so, I mean, okay. Rough terrain. During this day, they did get some air reconnaissance in the air, which had heat-sensing fixed-wing aircraft, as well as ground crews on the North Inlet, again, East Inlet trails, Black Lake, Upper Glacier Gorge area, Thunder Lake, Lake Powell. So now we have a list of all the different teams in the area. So we had Laramie County Search and Rescue, Grand County Search and Rescue, Rocky Mountain Rescue Group, Colorado Search and Rescue Association, the State of Colorado Department of Fire Prevention and Control, Multi-Mission Aircraft, Northern Colorado Interagency Helitac, which is a U.S. Forest Service group, and a contracted helicopter with TransAero. So really, this is a pretty massive search. A lot of different teams in the area. So it's now October 2nd, still no sign of Chad. There, according to the MPS, there were 51 individuals out in the field this day. Two dog teams also assisted with the search efforts. Efforts today and this day focused on areas around Black Lake, Stoneman Pass, Chief's Head Peak, Westridge of Pagoda, Andrews Glacier, Upper Chaos Canyon, and Tyndall Glacier. A lot of cool names. The morning during this search, team members were able to run aerial reconnaissance with a helicopter while weather was favorable, and they focused on Mount Alice, Chief's Head Peak, and the surrounding ridgeline areas. But again, weather moved in that afternoon, some heavy precipitation that grounded the aircraft. So it's now October 3rd, and Joe's got some pictures of the actual search and rescue mission going on. And, I mean, it just gives you the scope of what they're looking through.
It's just snow.
Yeah. It's so vast. I haven't been to Rocky Mountain, but I've been to other, alpine parks, and it's so vast.
It is.
You really can't get a feel for how big it is unless you've been out there. So October 3rd, 2023, again, they have not found any sign of Chad. And today the weather got so bad with snow, ice, and strong winds at higher elevations, it not only impacted the air search efforts, but also impacted the ground crews. So They had a tough time searching. So because they were unable to get out in the field in full strength, a lot of team members were reviewing photographs from the previous day's air operations, and they were going into kind of more planning on what they were going to do in future days. So the good thing is that even though on a day where they can't get out there and get in the field, with today's, you know, modern search techniques, there's a lot of media that's created, a lot of images and videos that team members can, you know, kind of comb through while they're waiting for the weather to clear. So, you know, the search is still ongoing, even if they're not out in the field. But unfortunately, what we've said in the past is those first couple days are vital to finding someone in this kind of environment. And with the gear that he had, it would have been pretty tough for him to survive multiple nights in these conditions. So the fact that it's now October 5th and they haven't found him yet is, you know, you're not losing hope yet, but it's going to be tough. So like I said,
especially if he doesn't have the gear.
Yeah. That's the biggest thing.
Like, that's the biggest thing.
He was running. He didn't, you know, he wanted to go light cause he was going to do a 28 mile like mountain run. That's not conducive to, you know, wearing 50 pounds of gear on your back. So, October 5th now. So, like I said, snow, ice, and high wind has been hampering the ground search efforts for Chad. So they, you know, they're continuing to look at photographs and prepare for future ground searches. They did get some helicopter flights up in the air that day. And found some suitable landing areas to insert teams into the field. So they were going to do this tomorrow. So, but again, weather really hampered this search. And unfortunately this, you know, this is kind of, what happens.
We lost the video recording for a minute.
How long?
I don't know. Oh. We'll cut it in.
Okay.
Sorry, video people.
So, to limit scent distractions and assist the effectiveness of dog teams, they started closing parts of the park at around 6 p.m., so from Mount Alice to McHenry's Peak, including Black Lake and Lion Lake 1, Lion Lake 2, and Snowbank Lake. So it's now October 7th of 2023. They mentioned that on the 6th, after cloud cover had lifted, they were able to get air operations back up in the sky and were taking additional high-resolution photographs of the ridgeline areas. On this day, I believe, might have been the most people in the field. So they had 77 searchers, including 62 team members in the field, seven search teams in the field had, and three dog teams. And one state of Colorado fire prevention and control drone team. So they continued to focus on a lot of the areas we've been talking about, Black Lake, Lake Powell, Stoneman Pass, Chiefshead Peak, McHenry's Peak, Mount Alice, and the surrounding ridgelines. And again, they continue to review, you know, the thousands of pictures that they're taking. They also continued closures in the park. So they closed areas from Mount Alice to McHenry's Peak, including Black Lake, Lion Lake 1, Lion Lake 2, Snowbank Lake. And at the time, they did not list a date when the closures would be lifted. So, and now it is October 9th. We actually have a statement from the family. So Chad's wife met with Rocky Mountain National Park Search and Rescue on the 8th. And they spent about an hour going through everything they've done from the time Chad was reported overdue. And over the weekend, they mentioned that they had 77 people on the ground, including three dog teams, a drone, a helicopter, and multi-mission aircraft. They stressed to the family that at this time, they've exhausted all of the leads they had at this point. So they've, you know, every location they thought he could have gone to, they've, you know, searched. They suspected they knew where Chad most likely was and had a slip or fall. They said with it being over 11 days in the snow that they've had and the gear that they suspected he was wearing, that it really was a high probability that Chad sadly passed away at this point. But they told the family they were going to continue searching in a limited and continuous mode as weather permits.
Did they state where this area was that they suspected he may have gone missing?
This statement didn't. They didn't state that.
Okay.
So they said they knew internally where they think he might have gone missing. So okay. It is now October 10th, and search efforts continued through the weekend for Chad in the park. Like we said, the teams included the dog teams, the drone team. They had another helicopter inserting ground teams deeper into the park. But they made a statement and said search efforts have not provided further clues at this point. And basically, broad scale search efforts are being suspended, but they do this in a lot of cases. They will continue to send patrols into the area, you know, because they constantly are training, you know, to do search and rescue missions. So a lot of times they'll train in areas where people have gone missing in the past. So it's, you know, it's a two birds with one stone kind of thing. It's they're getting, you know, valuable training, and they could potentially locate someone's missing remains. So they obviously never found Chad. They didn't find anything related to Chad. He's still missing to this day. Family and friends believe that he had an unfortunate mishap in the park. Like we said, he was running up some steep inclines on, you know, talus and a slip, and you could go tumbling down the side of the mountain into an area that just would be hard to search. Jumping right into theories, I think that's probably the most likely scenario. He didn't have any gear to be stuck out there in this kind of environment.
Yeah.
He was off trail running at very high elevations. Mm-hmm. He was very fit and very experienced, so he could handle that. He has handled that dozens of times in the past.
Yeah. Yeah, he definitely knew what he was doing. It doesn't mean you can't have an accident.
Yeah, there are
I would argue he probably wasn't making dumb decisions.
No.
He's probably doing what he normally does.
I think he probably just you do it
like a freak accident.
So many times an accident is bound to happen.
Yeah, people make mistakes.
Yeah.
No matter how good you are, how often you do something, you can make your people and you're imperfect, so.
And yeah, I mean, it's an interesting case. I always like the cases where we get an inside look at the search operations.
Yeah.
They really had a lot of people out in the field for this one. And weather, once again, this is a constant problem. And
if weather doesn't cooperate, it
Alpine
reduces
searches. Yeah.
It's so much harder.
Yeah.
And there's so little time when you don't have the right gear those conditions are terrible.
Yeah. So. I'm not going to say this is a cut and dry case. I'm going to rule out foul play.
Yeah, I agree.
I'll rule out animal attack.
Agree.
There are black bears in the park. There's some theories that maybe he had like something happened, like he encountered a moose or something. A moose could kill you.
Yeah, but I could get in trouble here. I've never heard of moose at Alpine. I'm sure they go up there, but every time I've seen a moose, it's definitely been in the within tree line.
Yeah, they're down.
Gone up there, but I feel like there's very little that goes up that high because there's not a lot of resources. There's nothing there. Once you get above tree line, it's just barren.
They're going to stay down by the lakes. So,
yeah.
I don't think it's an animal attack. I think this one, either it was an accident or he got up there and some weather moved in quick and he got like rained on and got wet and then exposure got him.
Yeah. I've talked about this last time when we were there last time I got hit with that snowstorm. I had two of my friends had bad hypothermia where they started their, on the very close stages of being in a very bad spot where they took their clothes off, put new clothes on, which then subsequently got wet because they did it before they set their tent up.
Yeah.
And then we caught them because they were, it was, we broke into two separate groups because we were waiting for some slower people, yeah, but we didn't want anyone going alone. So we broke up in an even amount of groups. And then we caught our second group walking back out as we were coming to base camp. And we're like, what are you guys doing? They're like, we're going back to the car to change. Yeah. We're wet. And car was a day and a half away.
Yeah.
They were just like, oh, we're going to go change real quick. And literally just no,
yeah,
we're not think, they were not processing normal thought.
Yeah.
And we had to, we were like, hey, no, there's dry clothes this way. They're like, oh, okay. Like we like kind of fake them out and be like, no, we got it. It's this way. And they're like, oh, very suggestible.
Yeah.
It was very weird. It was like talking to someone who was sleepwalking.
Yeah.
And honestly, they would not have made it.
Yeah.
It's pretty scary how quick it can happen.
Yeah, and I mean, he had a GPS with him. We don't know, you know, like a GPS is great in the sense that you can mark waypoints. So like you could mark the...
Well, and you can see where you came from.
Yeah.
So you can go back.
If, I mean, if it's, you know, in that mode, I have a GPS where you need to turn that on.
Oh, to do your trail?
Yeah. It's not just going to on its own...
Yeah.
And I'll be perfectly honest. I've done hikes and I'll have my GPS in my pack and it's off.
Yeah.
Because you get kind of complacent.
Yeah. And
you do it enough and you're like, I'll have it.
At least the ones I've used to have burned through battery pretty quick.
Yeah. Mine burned through battery. And like, so he, you know, he had a GPS with him, but he's running off trail.
Yeah.
Maybe he just got lost. And it's not like when you had that map up, it's not like, it's not like some parks where like if you get up at elevation, it's like, all right, just follow, go down, and you'll get out to like civilization or road.
Yeah.
Depending on where he was, if he was at one of these peaks and he goes down, he's just going to be in a valley surrounded by more mountains.
Yeah. And it's always hard to get an idea of how vast and large these spaces are.
Yeah.
It's significant. And he's a trail runner, so he's doing way faster times
he's
than we ever do.
A lot of ground.
But he's covering around the ground, but still, this is a really far distance. You know, when you have a pack and you're doing 28 miles, that's like, if you're really good, I'm sure someone can do it in a day, but you're not coming back out that same day.
Yeah.
Or maybe they can. I'm unaware of it. It's not fun to do it that way.
Yeah.
You know, that's at least a two-dayer if you want to not be just miserable.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, either an accident where he actually fell, or I'm thinking maybe he had his GPS, but he didn't have it on because, you know, he's done this so many times that, like I said, I've gotten complacent and had mine off while hiking. Maybe he...
And just, he probably didn't have a paper map
maybe
or the waterproof maps.
We don't know, but yeah, and he just got lost. And I mean, this is some, you know, crazy terrain, and it's not as simple as just go down and you'll find a road in civilization.
Yeah, especially if you go off the wrong side.
Yeah. So, yeah, I think the two biggest possibilities, you know, maybe three is he, you know, I think slip and fall is a big possibility, and he's in an area that just no one really goes to.
Yeah.
Second possibility.
If he's off trail, 100%.
Yeah, second possibility is he went off trail and got lost, didn't get injured, but just succumbed to the elements because he didn't have any gear with him to stay overnight.
Yeah, you have a limited amount of time, and it's very easy to get lost off trail.
Yeah, and third, maybe some weather blew in real quick, and he got wet, and then hypothermia set in. And again, that would be almost like scenario two. He get lost and succumb to the elements.
My guess is he went off trail and got lost.
Yeah. I think that
I think that's the most plausible with someone who's experienced because it's very dangerous to go off trail. And it looked kind of snowy.
Yeah.
You lose the trail when it's not covered. If you're an alpine and it's hard enough because you have to rely on the different cairns that are set up there.
Yeah.
If you're see the wrong thing that you think's one and you're off trail, and you don't have the gear to wait it out.
Yeah.
That's not good.
Well, and hypothermia could have set in pretty quick because if he had been running.
Oh, as soon as he stops moving.
Yeah. If
it gets
cold.
If he's
been running for a while, he'll be, you know, he could be sweaty.
Yes.
And as soon as you stop for, you know, 5 or 10 minutes, you're going to cool down and you're going to get really cold.
Yeah.
And
I'm with you on that one. That's kind of, I think, off trail just because of his experience. It had to have been either a freak accident.
Yeah.
To which if he's on trail, I feel like they would have found him.
And I think the areas that were like the most dangerous, like, so his planned route that
I can't hear it.
No. The planned route that he was on, I think they kind of knew where the dangerous spots were.
Mm-hmm.
So like if he would have fallen in those areas, there probably was a decent chance he would have been found by search and rescue.
Yeah.
But because this is so vast, and if he got lost and went off trail, and I think if you add in the fact that he is a trail runner, and this, we've talked about how this happens with people, that when you get lost, your first instinct is, oh, I know how to get back to the trail.
Yeah.
And you end up going in the wrong direction and getting even more lost. So now maybe factor in he's a trail runner, and he's like, instead of just walking in the wrong direction, he's like, well, I'm going to run. I know where I'm going. I'm going to run back to
covering
trail.
A lot of ground,
he's covering a lot of ground in the wrong direction, out, maybe even out of the search area.
Yeah.
So a guy like this, you got to imagine, could cover ground pretty quick.
Yeah.
I mean, he looked fit, a very experienced, you know, trail runner, marathon runner. Maybe he got lost and then thought he knew which direction to go and started running that way. And now he's 5-6 miles away from his planned route.
Yeah.
And in something this vast, an area this vast, that you know, the chances of being found now are even slimmer.
Yeah. No, I agree. I'm like, yeah. I have
when
nothing.
Has this happened before?
This has happened like 4 times ever, but I can't think of anything outside of that.
We should have called up the guy that we interviewed from Rocky Mountain National Park. The
oh, yes.
Guy.
Yeah. I wonder if he was involved. We can email him. Like, we can do a follow up.
I didn't see his organization listed.
Okay.
In the search. He was from Rampart.
Rampart Search and Rescue. Yeah. Good memory.
Yeah.
Look at you.
I think this one.
I'm in agreement with you on that one.
A little more cut and dry for me.
Yeah.
Obviously, he's still missing. So.
Well, I hope they find him.
Yeah.
It's always good closure for the family.
Yeah, absolutely.
Well, thanks again for tuning into our show and listening and sharing with all of your friends and family. Be sure to go on our socials and tell us what you think. You could call in and give us your theories. We definitely like hearing, because we've had a couple times where people come up with a theory that we didn't think of. And it really, it's nice to hear. We love interacting with you guys. So definitely make sure you do that. As Mike said early in the episode, if you want to support us monetarily outside of telling everybody to subscribe and listen to our show, visit our Facebook store or our website. You can get some cool swag. Subscribe to Patreon, YouTube, Apple, and Patreon links up with Spotify, correct?
Yes.
Okay, so you can sign up for those to get access to additional shows and content that you won't get on the free site. And there's a lot of fun stuff there.
And when it works.
Yeah, and video when it works. If you stuck with us, we apologize. I don't know how much time we missed. It might be like the middle of the show. So we'll just have the beginning and the end. I don't know why it keeps doing that. That's really obnoxious. And lastly, when enjoying the beauty of nature, whether backpacking, camping, or simply taking a walk, always remember to leave no trace. Thanks, and we will see you all next time.